I covet your prayers for the next couple of weeks. Actually, I do all the time, but especially the next couple of weeks. Next Sunday, I'll be leaving for Nigeria, be the school in Jos. The School of Biblical Studies in Jos will be having its graduation next week. And Solomon, I was there for the first graduation. We started that school with Solomon when I was in Gadsden. And I was there about midway through. And Solomon is retiring this year. And he's asked if I could come back for his last graduation. And so the elders have granted permission for that. And we'll be leaving next Sunday and be in Nigeria for about 10 days. And so I would covet your prayers for a safe trip and safe return. David will be preaching next Sunday and Scott the following Sunday. And so and I believe there may be some others that will speak on Sunday night, but keep that in mind. Rewrite. I want you to, we're going to go through some verses, but I want to tell you some stories first. And this one is about, it's one of my favorite stories, and it's about the 150-year-old axe. These two older guys were visiting with each other, and they were talking. And they, one of the guys happened to notice hanging in the shed the other fellow's axe. And he made a comment about it. And he said, yep, that axe has been around for a long time. It was actually my great-grandfather's axe. And it's over 150 years old. And the man looked at him kind of strange and said, that can't be right because it looks almost like it's a brand new axe. He said, oh, no, it's my grandfather's, 150 years old. It's had about 15 new handles and 3 new heads. But other than that, it's the same axe that my grandfather had so many years ago. What makes us do stuff like that? What makes us rewrite things as if they never occurred? Now, he wanted to believe that was his grandfather's axe. But it hadn't been his grandfather's axe in a long, long time. He probably never touched his great-grandfather's axe. And sometimes that's the way it goes. Why do we change the facts of history? Why do we do that? To teach a different lesson. To teach a different lesson to others, or to teach a different lesson to ourselves. This has been going on for a long time. It's been going on for a long time with man's history. It was going on during Bible times, when that man that had the rock thrown down, or the millstone thrown down by the lady from the tower, and he told his armor bearer, kill me with the sword so nobody will ever be able to say a woman killed me. He wanted to rewrite history. But history was not rewritten because the story is recorded exactly as it occurred in God's Word. One of my first experiences with it that became so disgusting to me was when we took our kids to see Disney's Pocahontas. And Pocahontas, according to Disney, and you think, okay, I can understand other people writing history, but not Disney. Well, that's not true of Disney anymore. And Disney completely rewrote Pocahontas to the point that the one who led the other into a relationship with their God was Pocahontas leading John Smith instead of the other way around. And that all of these guys that came to the island where Pocahontas lived were nothing but a bunch of white guys that wanted to destroy nature and completely mess up the environment. And that's all that they were good for. And they weren't good for anything else. You don't get that if you actually read the history of Pocahontas and what happened in connection with that story. And you have to piece together details and look at a lot of different ones to see what's there. But why do we do that? Why do we rewrite history? Because there was a different lesson for the people who wrote this movie that they wanted to be taught that was not in that story. And so they rewrote the story in order to get across their agenda. in order to get across what they really wanted to be known by the people of our culture. And it didn't matter to them that they were completely rewriting history. It didn't matter to them that they were not telling the facts as they occurred. The only thing that mattered to them is that we get our message across to the people of this day if we have to completely rewrite everything that was done in history. We are filled with that today. We are absolutely covered up with it today. And people do the same thing with the Bible. Now, I'm going to get a little picky here. I understand that. And sometimes we get this with the Bible, with things that may be absolutely insignificant, except we don't have it right. And to me, that's a great significance. Let me tell you what I'm talking about. For a while, and I think we've changed the words now, but for a while in Vacation Bible School, you used to sing a song, Wandering Jews. Once there were three wandering Jews. Wandering, Jews. And they wandered. And what we would say is they all went down to Egypt. That's what the original song said. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were those three wandering Jews. And we said they all went down to Egypt. That's not true. They didn't all go down to Egypt. Abraham and Jacob did, but not Isaac. And when that was pointed out, we changed the word. We changed that line a little bit. There was another song we would sing in VBS about the great big fish. Big fish that swallowed up Jonah. And then the big fish spit out Jonah out in the deep blue sea. Everything ended in the deep blue sea. Well, why would the big fish be of any help to Jonah if he spit him out in the deep blue sea? He didn't spit him out in the deep blue sea. The big fish spit out Jonah on the dry land. When you get the facts right, when you look at what it actually says. And we had that song saying that he was spit out in the deep blue sea. Now, it made a nice rhyme, but it didn't tell what actually occurred. We changed history in order to make the rhyme fit. And is that a big deal? Is that too picky? Well, shouldn't we want to get things right? Shouldn't we especially want to get things right in our life? We're going to make a little slight transition, but I want us all to think about this. And I'll lead you into why in just a second. All of this got to bothering me, or I got to thinking about it, got to reevaluating me. And, you know, when you're getting ready to make a trip to Nigeria, you do a lot of self-evaluation. You'll do a lot of reevaluation. You'll do that all the time anyway. Proverbs chapter 23 and verse 23 says this. Buy the truth and do not sell it. The same is to be true of wisdom, instruction, and insight. Buy the truth. Buy wisdom. Buy instruction and insight. And don't sell it. Why would you sell it? Well, you might sell it to make some money or to save some money. I know that this is what I ought to do, but I get more money if I do it this way. I know this is what I ought to do, but I save myself a lot of money if I do it this way. So I'm going to do it this way. To keep from being embarrassed, if I tell the truth, if I say exactly what happened, I'm at the very least going to be greatly embarrassed. At the very most, I'm going to be in a great deal of trouble. And so to keep from being embarrassed or to keep from having trouble, I will rewrite exactly what happened and rewrite exactly what occurred. If I say what is the right thing to say, and if I say the truth, I'll lose a friend. I don't want to lose a friend. So I won't say what's right. And I won't say what's true. Because I would rather keep a friend than to say what's right and to tell them what's correct. If I do what's right, I can't do what I want to do. If I do what's right and if I hold on to the truth, then I won't be able to accomplish the thing that I want to do. So I'll rewrite. All of this is covered in a statement in the book of Hebrews, chapter 12 and verse 16, that is made about Esau. See to it, the writer says, in giving us warning for each other. See to it that no one is sexually immoral or is godless like Esau. Now, Esau's problem was not sexual immorality. His problem was godlessness. What is godlessness? Ignoring God, ignoring what God would want, ignoring what God has said. In that same way, Eve was godless. Every time we sin, we are godless. And Esau is described here as being godless. Here's what he did. Who for a single meal sold his inheritance rights as the oldest son. What he had coming to him by God's decree as the oldest son, he turned his back on for a bowl of soup. He considered at the moment a bowl of soup more important and more needful than what was going to be beneficial for him and to him for the rest of his life. How often do we do that? How often do all of us do that? Selling the truth. When I say just looking around, we've tried to go to baseball games as much as we can. We don't always make them to everybody, but we get around to a few. And this summer has been one of those typical summers where so far we've made it to two. The first one that we went to was to see Helena and Vestavia Hills, to see Mr. Fitz and Mr. Whitaker do battle with one another. A battle that they've been doing with one another for some time. It was an enjoyable event, an enjoyable time. They pretty well balanced out. The Stavia Hills got the better in the game, but it was a fun thing to do. That going to that game and seeing those guys who are both headed for college scholarships, who are both going to be, who are both already outstanding players, to watch them, and then last Saturday, no, it wasn't last Saturday, it was one day this week, and I can't remember the night now, but one day this week, we went to see the Helena 3- and 4-year-olds play T-ball. Now, there's a little difference between Helena 3- and 4-year-olds and the high school game between Helena and Vestavia Hills. But I sat there as we were surrounded by almost as large a crowd as there was at Helena and Vestavia, with all of these parents all around and other kids all around, and these 3- and 4-year-olds being out on a baseball diamond and being engaged in some forms of baseball. They were learning how to swing a bat with a ball on top of a tee. They were learning how to stand in the field, although they weren't paying any attention to the batter. They were learning that you need to throw the ball to first base or you need to throw the ball home whenever you get it. And it doesn't matter if half of your team is between you and where you're throwing it. You just go ahead and throw it anyway. And if somebody gets hit, well, that's okay, as long as they don't get hit very hard. And then you have the fielding, which either results in you chase the ball until it stops rolling and you pick it up, or you slap it down with your glove and to get it stopped. And all that was great fun to watch. Now, I remembered it when our kids were going through it. I coached our boys in baseball until they all went to begin to play baseball in middle school. But I coached them all through Little League. And so we were involved with it for a long time and a good while. And all of this brought back a lot of great memories. But the thing that got me and got me to thinking was, with both teams, there were 10 dads on that field in kind of a semicircle, helping make sure the kids knew where they were going and they stayed on base. One parent had to actually hold one little boy on second base, literally had to squat down and wrap his arm around him and hold him on second base until the ball was hit. But there were 10 dads that were out there with these boys and girls helping them to play. And when the team switched, 10 more dads went out. And I thought, wow, these dads are involved in these kids' life. And I wonder, to what degree are they involved in their life? Are they involved in their lives with regard to baseball? Or with regard to hunting? Or with regard to other things? Where are they with regard to the truth? How involved are they with their children's lives with regard to the truth as God has presented it? I wonder how hard it was to get 10 men to volunteer to be partial coaches for the 3- and 4-year-old teams. And I wonder if they had as hard a time as we have of getting people involved here. We're heading into our summer. We're heading into Vacation Bible School. And already so many efforts are being made to try to get volunteers to help us put together our Vacation Bible School again this year. And every year we have them. Every year they come. But it just made me want to stop and think about me, and I wanted all of us to think about ourselves. How are we doing with buying the truth and never selling it? That with regard to our children and with regard to us, with regard to all of our families, is the truth more important to us than anything else? Is the truth the top priority for us? Is it something we've already sold in order that we might have and have the time for something much more important to us than the truth? And that's just something we need to think about and something that we need to be aware of. And you see it all around us. When I said look around, just look around at everything going on around you in life and just how valuable is the truth and what you do from day to day. Just how valuable is the truth with regard to what you do with your time? Just how valuable is the truth regarding what you say and what you do? Buying the truth, sell it not. We even raised the question today. Can you find truth? How do you find truth anymore? Same way you always have. It's this way. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. This is not going to be rewritten. When you stand before Jesus in judgment, it's not going to be a book by your rewrite of what you thought Jesus was saying. It's going to be the words he actually spoke. And he gives us a promise that his words will never pass away. We will always have them. And we will be facing them when we stand before him in judgment. Buy the truth and don't sell it. That means his words, the words he actually spoke. To the Jews who believed in him, Jesus said, if you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. What priority is that in my life? He said to those Jews that believed him, if you hold on to my teaching, hold on to what I said, don't rewrite it, don't change it, don't ignore it, but if you hold on to what I have taught, then you're truly my disciples, my followers. And then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Ask, it'll be given to you. Seek, you'll find it. Knock, and the door will be open to you. The truth is there. It's available for each and every one of us. It's there for our seeking. It's there for our asking. It's there for our opening. Now, if we don't ever ask for it, we don't ever seek it, we don't ever open it, we don't ever look for it, we're never going to have it. But it's there. It's there for each and every one of us to have. Sometimes we just need to step back and take a look at ourselves and say, what am I doing with the truth? Am I godless or godly? Am I striving to get the truth and hold on to it? Or have I already sold it in my life for the things I consider to be the most important. Buy the truth and never sell it. Are you in Christ? Do you need to come home to Christ? We offer you his invitation as together we stand and as we sing.